You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jeannie Motherwell. She's calling from Boston. Jeannie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me, Brainerd.
So, Jeannie, let's talk about what you're working on now. Of course, I know a little bit about your work, but can you just tell me what you're doing in your studio at the moment?
Well, right now I am preparing for Open Studios this weekend, but further down the line I am preparing for a show in Boston next fall. And I am working on very large, some small, but mostly large boards and also canvases. So my work is, I'm very interested in the surface and the light in my work. So I have stumbled across two mediums that I like. One is canvas on board, because I prefer a hard surface, and I put absorbent ground on it so it does a bleed effect. And I'm very interested in that. They work, they take a lot longer to make. They're much more like, you know, traditional painting for me anyway. And then the clay boards, which I have custom sized, are a very smooth absorbent surface that is very, very slick. And I've been really enamored with them for the past 3 or 4 years. And I've been trying to sort of hone in on how I best want to utilize them. So early on, I was throwing paint around and, you know, lifting, you know, on the floor, and I was lifting the boards and letting them, you know, slide around the paint. I use a lot of water and a lot of acrylic paint, and they're very abstract, and I would wait to see what would happen, and then I would go in and edit. Now I am doing less editing until they're really, really dry, and I'm finding the effects of what goes on with the paint and the mediums I mix with it, as well as the clay board, seem to have some really interesting surprises that intrigue me to no end, because they seem to affect the space and the light a lot, which is what I'm primarily interested in.
So the difference between, like, the clay board, when you said you were initially doing, as I heard you, kind of canvas on board, and you apply a very absorbent ground, I would imagine that surface reacts very differently than when you're painting on the board you mentioned, right? That it's in terms of even the techniques you mentioned about pushing paint around, that those two surfaces, I would think, would react very differently.
They're really different. I started out, before I started doing the canvases, I would work on things like silk and various other materials, because I was interested in how the staining and bleeding worked. And then when I found out about absorbent ground, which you actually mix into the gesso, and then I oftentimes will add a little tint to the gesso, so I'm not working on a stark white surface. And it, depending on how much absorbent ground you add to it, it makes it bleed and absorb more or less. And I discovered the hard way that if you put too much, it keeps absorbing and doesn't stop. And you keep going back to your studio trying to rework the painting. You can't figure out why you can't finish it. It's because it keeps disappearing. So there's a lot of technical stuff that I've been sort of trying to figure out by trial and error, and that was one of them. So it's essentially finding a formula.
And the boards, though, the boards are quite different. I would think those aren't absorbent at all, right? Those are surfaces that
absorbent. They are. They're the clay itself absorbs. They don't absorb in the same way and not quite as much, but they do absorb. And sometimes I will, when I get it to a certain saturation and it's dry enough, I will spray it with some kind of gel medium so that it doesn't continue to absorb, because then it can sort of fade. So I'm really playing constantly with how to keep what's there, how to allow things to sort of disappear. And because I'm working wet on wet every day when I come back to my studio, new things happen, and it's a matter of trying to figure out how to control some of it and how to allow the accidents to work in my favor.
And so for the show in Boston, how large will the pieces be? So there are some large pieces and small pieces. What are the sizes of these?
Well, the small pieces probably will be mainly for open studios, because open studios is a very community-oriented thing. It's not usually a situation where people come with a lot of cash and want to spend a lot of money, but oftentimes they want to walk away with something. And so I'll put some smaller boards in there. The show in Boston at Raphaeus Fain Gallery will be much larger pieces. And at this point, we're trying to figure out how many walls we want to use, if we want to add any, subtract any. And so, you know, I'm thinking there might be 20 or 30 large-ish pictures in the show.
And by large, are these over 4 feet square, or?
Yeah, well, they're all different sizes, but, you know, 48 by 72 and larger, kind of.
Wow. So when you're working on those pieces, because as you talked about some of your other pieces, and I also saw a short video of you moving the paint around and using some of the processes you were talking about, are those large canvases, boards rather, turned around and manipulated, or are you painting them on an easel or a wall without turning them around?
I start on the floor because it is so wet on wet, and I'm not particularly interested in a lot of drips. I'm interested in it looking more purposeful and controlled. And so I start on the floor and get the sort of base down as to the structure that I want. And then as it dries, I can put it up against a wall or on an easel just to get some distance. Because they're large, I have to be able to get distance. And the way my studio lights are, which are those awful fluorescent, you know, tubes, when it's wet, if I'm standing on a ladder, I get the light reflection in the picture, so I can't really see it. So I have to wait till it dries a little bit so I can lean it up against the wall, you know, to get some distance.
And to talk about the content a little bit of these, I know you've mentioned that you're interested in, you know, in kind of weather-related imagery or Hubble-type images of the universe. But both of those things are ideas that have tremendous depth to them, right? And I'm talking like, you know, perceptually, when we images of the universe or the stars or weather is this almost infinite space that we're looking into. As you're working on them, is that primarily what you're after? Because it in a way seems so ambitious. You know, it seems sort of like I always think that's sort of the holy grail of painting, right? To have this surface that seems to go on forever. But is that kind of what you're after, that sort of what I like to think of as sort of a gazing surface that just keeps going? Or is it actually more imagery related to weather or the universe?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think what I'm, you know, when I look at pictures that were taken by the Hubble, for instance, you know, there's just this wow factor. And so I want to kind of have a little bit of a wow factor, but I want people to get interested in the space, that it's not a simple space, it's not a flat space, and it's not necessarily a deep space, but it's complicated or complex. And I want it to, I want the picture to be beautiful. I don't want it to be like an ugly, I want people to walk in, look at it, and go, wow, that's really something, you know? And so that's kind of the way I feel when I look at outer space or, you know, the supermoon or, you know, the pictures that I see from Hubble and whatnot. I got this sort of idea from, you know, I used to have a studio in Provincetown on the water for many, many years, for, you know, over 30 years. And I spent many hours looking at the water and seeing how the light changed every second. It was just amazing to me. And when I lost the studio that was kind of, had a kind of traumatic effect on me because my next studio was not on the water and I didn't even have any windows. And so when I was shown these pictures by the Hubble, that sort of gave me entree into a new way of seeing the sky, so to speak. And so I've been trying to kind of blend the two without really having a horizon, but sort of maybe the suggestion of something like that, you know.
But that's such a different way of working. In other words, you were working, I mean, you know, not really from life, but in a sense being, you know, inspired by that actual infinite space in front of you. And you're saying now a lot of what you're looking at is imagery, which doesn't have that same kind of space, but of course points to it, but it's not nearly as all embracing as I was imagining your studio must have been on the water.
Yeah, true.
And well, that's really exciting, and I'm looking forward to your show in Boston. I'd like to ask you a little bit about also your parents. I mean, of course, your father was Robert Motherwell and stepmother Helen Frankenthaler, who are pretty giant figures still looming over the arts. How did that? I mean, not just as a child, but as a growing adult. Do you think affect your art? Because that's certainly something that most artists didn't grow up with. Most artists are growing up with parents who maybe relate to their work to some degree, but your father and stepmother were both giants in the field.
Right. I often refer to it sort of growing up like having movie stars as parents, only they don't know you by looking at you. They don't recognize you. It was pretty intimidating, but it was also fascinating. I mean, I met wonderful, really interesting people, great artists. I was very young when the abstract expressionists were around, and most of them died, as you know. So I only knew them because I played with their kids kind of thing, you know. But Provincetown was a great mecca for artists and their children to hang out, and it was better than camp, Dad thought. So that's how we sort of grew up around artists and their kids, you know. Not sure exactly where you want me to go with talking about my parents individually, unless you want me to talk about how they influenced me.
I mean, in one sense, you know, besides your parents, which I would like to talk about, I mean, all the kids, as you're saying, which I didn't realize, that you're playing with on Provincetown as a child were also had parents whose artists were probably major and minor figures. Was that an influence as well? Because that's also, to me, something very curious, what it's like to be with that kind of group of children, all whose parents are all, to some degree, somewhat exceptional.
Well, not only that, it's just the whole, it's just having parents that are artists to begin with. It's such a different kind of life. And unless you've lived it, it's hard to explain it. But once you grow up with people like that, they get it totally. So, you know, artists are not just creative in their studios. They're creative in many ways. You know, they learn how to survive on, you know, pennies. They're usually very creative cooks. And fabulous cooks, and everything is sort of made up. It's and not manufactured, and that's what's really you know, you're just basically put in a creative environment on a daily basis, and it's really exciting. You have to use your imagination on a daily basis. You know, we weren't allowed to use coloring books, for instance. You know, we had to make our own drawings and our own stories, and you know, which is